We are joined right now by a longtime friend of the program. He is a Los Angeles legend. He is a columnist for the Los Angeles Times. He is Arash Markazi. Arash, what's going on, brother? How are you?
Not much, Jim. How are you?
Good, man. Good. So, Arash, let me start with the Lakers because you are all over this beat. They're 12-2. They're playing fun, exciting basketball. They've got stars. There's buzz. There's swagger. For those who do not know, how different does life here in Los Angeles feel when the Lakers are playing like this?
It's totally different. I mean, this is a Lakers town. And so when people say, you know, can the Clippers become Los Angeles' team? No, this is a Lakers town that comes from winning 16 championships, that comes from Showtime, that comes from Kobe Shaq. I mean, again, there's nothing like Los Angeles when the Lakers are rolling, and there's certainly nothing like June in Los Angeles where the car flags come up and everyone is excited. So, you know, this city, and again, the Lakers have never been that bad for that long. And when I say bad, Jim, they were the worst team, worst percentage for 6 years. I mean, they and the Knicks were the worst teams in the league for 6 years. So not only like are they good and are a playoff team, they are the best team right now.
It's hard to fathom that they were that bad that long, but they were. Arash Markazi is my guest. Now, Arash, 14 games is not an enormous sample size, but what do you make of the energy and the intensity that LeBron is playing with so far?
Jim, he's the type of player that if someone says that he's washed or he's done or he's not the king, he'll use that. And it might just be one person. It might just be one story, but he used that. And the way that he's playing through these first 14, 15 games of the season, it's almost like he has something to prove. You look at the last 10 games, I mean, triple doubles, five triple doubles. He's leading the list, 11 of them, like, assists per game. Again, he's not the point guard technically, but he kind of is. So, I mean, what he's doing right now, again, it's almost like he's trying to prove himself, which is crazy.
Hey, listen, it might be something of a surprise to some, Arash, given the miles he has on him, given the injuries coming off of, given his age, so maybe surprising, but nothing like the shock that is Dwight Howard. Now, back in August, you wrote a piece for the LA Times arguing Dwight is not the villain that Laker fans make him out to be. What did you see that made you explore that issue, that angle?
Well, first of all, the trade for Dwight wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like they gave up a ton. So I think when people look at his 1 year here, it was not a great year, but it's not like they traded, you know, three future first round picks, a bunch of young players. Beyond that, what I said was Dwight can give this team what it needs. Again, they need a guy to come off the bench and to provide some help. You know, again, if DeMarcus Cousins doesn't get hurt, this signing does not happen. And quite frankly, Jim, I don't even know if he has a job in the league. For a guy like Dwight to get a non-guaranteed deal, that was his one shot. So I'm basically saying, listen, let him come back and allow him the opportunity to provide this team what he can do. Now, listen, if he can't do it, you cut him, you move on, that's fine. And what has been really cool to see this year is just Laker fans hated him so much because, Jim, he was the first guy to leave this team. No superstar made the voluntary decision before Dwight to say, listen, I know you're paying me more, but I'm leaving you, and I'm going to where did he go? Houston. So he decided to come back, and it's been so cool to see him become a productive player here.
Arash, I think it's amazing. In fact, I'd be hard-pressed to think of another comeback or a guy showing up like that when everybody had given up on him. It's amazing to see. Arash Markazi is joining us. You also recently, Arash, had a conversation with Kevin Love. Before we get into some of the details, what was your overall sense in terms of where he is with his life and his basketball career right now?
You know, I mean, he was basically telling me he was, like, looking around the locker room, and he's the oldest guy on the team now. I mean, he just remembered being, like, a vital piece of a championship team, and now he's sort of, like, trying to help these young guys out, and he's 31, obviously happy with his role, but I do think a part of him would like to be, again, on a championship team, like on a contending team. But it was amazing what he's done with his life and talking about, you know, dealing with pressure and depression, like and anxiety. And he was like one of the first guys I remember to talk about this. So to hear him and use his platform in such a powerful way has been incredible.
You know, he actually was one of the very first to come out and do that. So what motivated his decision to make it public, and how does he feel about that decision right now?
You know, he said that he didn't want to suffer by himself, and he thought if he could help just one kid out, it was worth it. And, Jim, he's helped more than one kid out. I mean, he's used this platform to talk to team employees, to talk to players. Again, so some of these players don't want to come out and talk about the struggles because, again, we view them as having this amazing life, but there's a lot of pressure that comes with that. And another thing that he wants to do is help out younger kids who are going through this, whether they're high school players or in college. And so, you know, I mean, here's this guy who has this like incredible life, and he's saying, like, I feel you. I get depressed. I have these feelings, and that's okay, because for a long time it was like, unless you're hurt, you should play. Well, his grandmother passed away, and he never had the proper time to grieve her loss. So, you know, again, we view these guys as sort of these figures that, listen, you're getting paid a ton of money, you should perform. It's not like that.
We're talking to Arash Markazi. Now, Arash, I want to ask you something. I want to get into this, and I want to preface it by saying how incredible I think this is. Last week, you posted a couple of photos of yourself with the caption, hashtag Friday Motivation. The difference in weight from one photo to the other is absolutely incredible. When were those photos taken, and what kind of feelings do you have when you see both photos?
Yeah, it's still surreal, Jim. It was last September. It was Tuesday, September 25th. I had come back from vacation, and I couldn't get the seatbelt to fit. And it was the first time, listen, when you're big, you know you're big, but it was one of those moments where you're like, okay, I have to get the extender. And that was a tough thing. And so I got on the scale that said 329 pounds, and I don't know why that number stuck with me, because, again, I knew I was big, but when you're big, you don't go on a scale. 329 pounds was such a massive number, and at that point, I decided I'm going to do something about this. So every day, I'm going to do my cardio. I'm going to do 60 minutes of cardio. I'm going to try to watch my, try to stay under 1,600 calories. The consistency of that. And again, the first month was hard. But, Jim, in 1 year, and again, the number is still amazing to me, 130 pounds in 1 year. And it was no fad diet. It wasn't like I did anything nuts. I just said, listen, I'm going to do this for myself. 60 minutes a day, I'm going to walk, run something. And then again, I'm going to watch what I have. Again, I can have a cheat meal like every now and again. But, it was just, again, the cool thing about it was that it was a random Tuesday in September, because I had done that January 1st or that first Monday or the first day of the month. No, it was a random Tuesday in January. I mean, a random Tuesday in September. And I said, I'm going to take care of myself.
Good for you, Arash. I'm so proud of you, man. You look absolutely amazing. And there's more to it, though. You were recently on the TV show The Doctors, and you were talking about being a two-time cancer survivor. As you point out, one would think that somebody who had gone through cancer twice would be very careful about what they would eat, but food became something of a comfort for you. How would you describe the relationship to food and yourself during that period?
Yeah, it was, food was comforting, because when I got cancer the second time, I was in the hospital for 1 month. And it's sort of like at that point, you just want to make yourself feel good. And so, I would have, pizza and fried chicken and really foods that I should not have been having. And then when I got released from the hospital, again, you would have thought you would have taken care of yourself. And again, food was a comfort. So I didn't feel good about myself, so I resorted to food. And It was a cycle that, again, lasted 14 years. I mean, I checked into the hospital back in 2005. At one point my doctor said, listen, we're not worried about the cancer. We think we have that under control. I'm worried about your weight. And nothing like anyone said clicked. And I know there might be people out there, it takes that moment for it to click. And for whatever reason, it was the seatbelt for me and looking at the number 329. That relationship with food was hard because, again, when I didn't feel good about myself, I went to food. And so, your friends tell you, kind of watch what you eat, and then you get upset at them. So It took a long time. I wish it hadn't gotten to the point that it did, but I feel great now.
Rosh, I think that, in my personal opinion, a lot of us use food, right? And without going through nearly what you went through, and we still use food. I understand this. Let me ask you really quickly. What would you say to somebody who's listening right now where maybe it hasn't clicked? Maybe they're in a situation similar to the one that you were in. What would you say to them?
The key is just take care of yourself in starting small. So when I say 60 minutes, it doesn't have to be 60 minutes. Do something for 20 minutes. And you don't have to run. Just walk. Just, and then when you feel comfortable, jog. And then if you want to run, it's okay. You don't have to push yourself. Don't have to challenge yourself. Do something a little bit different than what you're currently doing. But the consistency is the big thing, because I know, listen, when I got on that treadmill and I'm 329 pounds, that is a big hill to climb. You're not going to lose 130 pounds in one day. But I am an example that if you do it consistency, a little bit of cardio, watch what you put in yourself, and you can change. And again, the first month it's going to shed, because again, I went from like having the worst foods and not going to the gym to doing something. So again, if you feel like it, don't push yourself. 20 minutes, 30 minutes. Walk, jog, do something, and I promise you, your life will change.
He is a columnist for the LA Times. He is a Los Angeles legend. He is a very good friend of the program. Rosh, man, I'm so proud of you. So happy for you, and you earned it, man. You did the work. You're still doing the work, and it is great to see you look and sound like this, Rosh. Great, great job by you.
You're the best, Jim. Thanks so much.
You too, bud. Take care. Couldn't be more proud. Couldn't be more impressed. Look at these pictures. They're absolutely incredible. Rosh has always been one of the most popular, likable members in this business. Like, we all love Rosh. Everybody loves Rosh. And I couldn't be more proud of him. Great job.